very special bonus episode of Pod Like a Hole. This is Eric Anderson. I'll be running the show on this one. And we've got a very special guest coming all the way from down under, beneath the skin, to talk about Fragile Deviations.
Okay, and we are back here for this bonus episode. This is your sole host, Eric Anderson. My other two co-hosts apparently have families to tend to. I do too, but I gave them all NyQuil about an hour ago and tucked them in. And yeah, so anyways, I did this because we got a special guest on here. We've got a listener that reached out to us on Facebook. And we got a lot of good fan interactions on there, but every now and then we get one that kind of inspires a little bonus content. And Nick Rusin messaged us and said that maybe we could have dived more into Fragile Deviations. And he's not wrong. The Fragile episode, well, we'll talk about it in a minute. He's not wrong. We've got a lot to talk about there, and I was more than happy to dive back into the content. So I have got Nick Rusin on the other line. Good evening, Nick.
Good afternoon from Australia.
That's right. We had kind of a bit of a snafu in the planning because we were both sure Australia was half a day behind us out here in California, but it turns out you're half a day ahead of us.
Makes things interesting.
Yeah, how is Tuesday, by the way? Is there going to be any like crazy news stories I should look out for or anything like that? Like what, like, you know, you're in the future. So
the only one that probably everybody knows about now is the sad news about Keith from the Prodigy. Yeah, you know, he's passed away now, so I guess a bit of moment of silence and respect for him.
That's right. Yeah, Keith Flint. I would definitely second that. Although that news did drop on Monday, so you know, I asked you for some news from the future because you were now in Tuesday. That did not scratch that itch, but that's okay. I never got huge into Prodigy. But I was definitely into like electronic and industrial music in 96 when Fat of the Land dropped. I, of course, had to buy that album up. And it did kind of blow my mind. They were doing something similar that like Atari Teenage Riot was doing with like drum and beat, break beats, and then like with a real punk aesthetic. But he was such a like a enigmatic vocalist. I don't know if you were at all a hip-hop fan, Nick, but I made the comment today that he's like the old dirty bastard of the rave scene. But
I got into Public Enemy when I was about 6 or 7 years old. That's about as far as I went with hip hop and rap. It was probably inspired by Terminator 2. Edward Furlong running around in his shirt.
That's enough. That would do it. That's enough to do it for anybody. That's great. That's great. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Nick. So clearly you're broadcasting from another hemisphere. And so what part of Australia are you ringing in from?
I'm from Brisbane, not Brisbane, as some people may pronounce it overseas. And I apologize in advance for our nasal accent and the fact that we do not pronounce the letter R. In this country, so that might throw off some of the listeners.
I think they can manage. I think we can, you know. I mean, we've got three California boys that probably sound, you know, like surfers. You know, you have your own surfers over there, I suppose. I assure you, we're not. We're just boring dads.
I just picture Anthony Kiedis in Point Break. So that's what you all look like to me.
You know, I'll settle for Flea in Point Break, but that's fair. That's so fair. What's your deal, Nick? When did you get into Nine Inch Nails?
Nine Inch Nails for me started Don't know what you guys would have it, but in grade 10 in high school. So we graduated in grade 12.
Same here.
Okay. Yep. I was a Marilyn Manson fan first. I had a, you know, older alternative brother, and he put me onto all the good stuff. And then I got heavily into Nine Inch Nails just before, just after The Fragile came out. I moved on from there. I know you guys have talked about the gamble that was Napster and LimeWire back in the day. I think my first ever download was the fixed version of Happiness and Slavery. Entirely underrated remix.
Beautiful remix.
I think.
So, thank you. Do you notice I'm the only one that stands up for fixed? That's ridiculous. I appreciate that. You know, you called the right guy tonight.
Yeah, I've still. I remember I did a school trip to China in the year 2000, and you know, I was like so stoked. I got this this dodgy copy of Broken, and I was just going, "Oh, you got to check out this song, Happiness and Slavery." And then found out that I'd have been studying the wrong version the entire time, and it was a little bit embarrassing.
Well, they're both good, but yeah, that is funny to get, yeah, because you get pretty amped on that fixed version, but that's all right. Well done. So I just have to know, because we have kind of a behind the scenes theory that a small pocket of our listeners actually just found us because of our Marilyn Manson episode that we did. Are you guilty of that, or did you find us because of Nine Inch Nails?
I think I saw you guys put a post up on the Nine Inch Nails Facebook group, and I was searching for a new podcast. Okay. You know, I'm up to date on The Dollop. I've listened to every episode of that. And, you know, I was searching for something else to listen to, and so you guys cropped up, and I thought, oh, yeah, cool. Let's see what you got to say.
Oh, I appreciate it. Yeah, that's good. I just wanted to confirm. We were sure that these Marilyn Manson fans are out there. And every now and then we'll get a comment here or there, and we're like, that must be one of the Marilyn Manson guys.
I share your guys' viewpoint on a lot of it. You know, he was good, then he went downhill, and then he's come back good again.
Right. I think he, in my opinion, needs to hit some more, bring the band back to kind of relevance for him. He is making better songs, but he's still kind of like the pop star with other stuff going on around him. And I kind of agree that like when his band was more important, he was better. So hopefully he's on his way there.
Yeah. The work he was doing with Twiggy and, you know, I think Zimzum was only there as like pretty much a live thing there, but that Antichrist era and Mechanical Animals, that was all amazing stuff. You know, I missed that tour for, I think that was 2000 in Australia, that he did Mechanical Animals. But the following year at our big festival at the time, Big Day Out, was, Nine Inch Nails headlining. So for, the first of the Fragile tour, so Fragility 1.0.
So you were there for that?
I was there for that. I was 15 years old, I think. You know, long dyed hair and, you know, just going absolutely nuts in probably one of the craziest mosh pits I've ever been in.
Oh, nice. That's great. So you're about 5 years then. You'd probably be about 5 years then younger than us. So that's kind of cool. That's great that you kind of, so you probably got into Nine Inch Nails, yeah, Fragile era then. I mean, you may have heard other stuff first, but that was probably dropping in your teen years, right?
Yeah, and so that's for me why Deviations has stood out. You know, anything that you discover during your teenage years, you have like an emotional resonance with. You know, it's probably why some of the tribal cultures of the world do their initiation rituals into adulthood with all their, you know, youth at those ages, and that way the stories keep on and keep going.
That's awesome. That's a really good little anthropological connection there. That's great. That's great. I haven't taken anthropology in 20 years, but that's a very good point. Nice. All right, cool. Well, what kind of, anything else you want to share about yourself? Are you, what other kind of industrial bands did you get into when you were seeking out that kind of music?
At the time, I mean, you know, I'm younger than you guys. So, the transition, you know, started off with, You know, like as a kid, Guns N' Roses and Metallica were like the biggest bands in the world. So, you know, I grew up with that and then got into Pantera. You know, really enjoyed those guys before getting into, like, I guess you'd say, like a darker side of music.
All right. So, yeah, you kind of like the metal, the kind of metal and the harder rock was definitely your foot in the door then for this kind of music.
Yeah, I'd say so. Industrial at the time, I mean, you know, around that time, nu metal became a big thing. Right. So, you know, Korn and, you know, Limp Bizkit. I mean, I had $3 bill, y'all, and I really dug that. And then by the time that, you know, the second and third albums were dropping, I was just so disappointed, I guess you'd say, as to how ridiculous it had all gone mm-hmm. by that stage.
it was such a weird, like, flash in the pan where, like, that first... Yeah, the first wave of that stuff, I mean, I don't know, like, if it was just because we were all just dudes in our teens or whatever, but it sounded like new and kind of interesting. And then by album two or three, it's, what? This is it? This is as big as this world gets. Yeah.
I went backwards from that point. All right, you know, that's when I got into the Doors and... you know, things like that. I mean, I only got into, say, Ministry like a couple of years ago, and they've, you know, backtracked through all of their catalogs. So, I mean,
You're in for a treat, and then some real low dips. But you are in for a lot of good stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Whereas I really like From Beer to Eternity and Americant. So, yeah, or Americant.
Oh, I love that new one. Yeah, that new one has definitely grown on me quite a bit. It's very
Tool was right up there. As a kid, and you know, it's so hard that they just don't release any more music. But apparently, the new one's 2 months away or something. So we'll wait and see. Right. I was also there for Soulfly and Slipknot to emerge, and Deftones. So that sound definitely came out as well. You know, pre-ordered Slipknot's first one, having read about him in a magazine, I think. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, definitely our co-host Steven, who I wish was here right now to talk to you about Slipknot, is a giant fan. And he's gotten both me and Mark to kind of come around on them a bit. Mark, a little bit more so than me. I'm a little slower to pick up on it, but they definitely have some talent. Even like they kind of hold out a lot more than the nu metal stuff. And then Deftones is a local band for us Sacramento boys.
Yeah. So. Yeah, they're great. I've seen them a couple times.
That being said, I've never seen them in concert.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, I saw them, 2 years ago, I think they played. And, they were amazing, you know, absolutely brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Well, yeah, you know, and your music credentials were not on trial here. I'm just kind of curious kind of what your background of listening to stuff is going into this, but... So let's just kind of transition into this album we want to talk about. Yeah, we talked about Deviations. We actually had to spread The Fragile out into 3 episodes.
Yes.
And a big part of that was my fault. the first time we went to record it, I had it all set up in my house. I had a big old fire pit roaring. We were going to record it outside so we can hear like nature sounds to kind of like match the tone of the album a little bit. Oh man, I got sloshed drunk. We all kind of invited, but I'd say it was a top 10 moment for my 30s. And we had to cut out like the last half of the right disc of Fragile.
Yeah, I thought that came off at one point. In one of those parts, it's just like, oh, that seemed to jump.
Yeah, I'm glad you noticed that. Then we had to spread out the remix album and then the Deviations into its own separate thing. So we did kind of go through it and just talk about standout tracks, but I definitely wasn't doing as deep a dive back then as I am now with the stuff. So I was excited to kind of revisit that with a micro lens. But anyways, this is a really cool album, right? I mean, it seems like according to what they released, Trent Reznor said they're going to make a limited edition version of the Fragile where they, him and Atticus are going to go back and kind of rework instrumental versions of the songs that already existed, and then some of the outtakes they had, they're going to rework those too. He said, Fragile occupies a very interesting and intimate place in my heart. I was going through a turbulent time in my life when making it, and revisiting it has become a form of therapy for me. So he removed the vocals and he thought it gives you a completely different experience, which I would agree with. And I suspect there's not a lot of information on the process they did making this. Some of the songs you can tell they just took out the vocals and nothing else is different.
There's a note that he says when it says it's instrumental, it's because at some point it had vocals on it. So finished demo or an outline. So I found that that sort of makes you wonder as to how many different takes they did on some of these songs.
Yeah, absolutely. And then some of them, but then I wonder about all the other ones, the ones that don't sound exactly like the music sounds in the album. If it almost sounds like, cause he brought Atticus in for it. Atticus was not part of the group at that time.
Nah.
So I almost wonder if he added like kind of his like kind of noisy sheen over a lot of those songs. Cause it definitely, the music sounds like that era of Nine Inch Nails. It definitely sounds like it was like in this proggy, like we called it swamp industrial. It was like in this proggy swampy area, but there was a lot of like really cool fret buzzing and like soloing and noodling and stuff like that. And that's all here. There's also this guitar fuzz that he doesn't really use anymore. This really like super compressed guitar fuzz that's on this, which is fun to hear that again. But then there is like a layer of this modern sounding Nine Inch Nails noise over the top of it, which I think that's where Atticus comes in.
Yeah.
Anyways,
you can pick all of those parts as well. As you guys have said, you know, it sounds like it's got bugs on it. And it's not just the tracks that literally have insect noises.
Right.
and yeah, as you say, Atticus adding some layering potentially, you know, it almost kicks off straight away in like the first track. Like I sort of tried to listen to them side by side, like play Somewhat Damaged from the Fragile. I've only got the CD version, not the vinyl or the cassette version, and then check out the Deviations version, and then just sort of compare, you know, what extra am I hearing on this?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So there is for listeners that haven't checked it out yet, I mean, it's good. It costs a pretty penny. It's that's for sure, but it sounds amazing. And it is a different experience, and it makes you appreciate every song a little bit more. And then all the new songs, for the most part, are as good as anything off like Ghosts or some of the soundtrack, the score work. So it's a really cool little thing.
See, I will interject there. I did go and see Nine Inch Nails during both the With Teeth and Year Zero era. And I was at a show where Trent said, hey, screw all these record executives and steal the shit out of my album. So I never got into vinyl. So I'm just saying that I illegitimately have heard all of these tracks.
we've implied we've taken similar steps on this end of the microphone as well. Yeah. I just feel like I do diligence to implore people to spend the money on it because it's worth it, but not everybody has $80 lying around either.
Yeah. If I start getting into vinyl, I mean, I have enough expensive hobbies as it is. And vinyl would just literally, I'd declare bankruptcy, I think.
Yes. Yeah. It'll do that. My co-host and I, we all met working at a record store. Me and my wife met at the same record store. So like we've amassed a vinyl collection from that with discounts and buying used and stuff like that. So it's not as bad as it sounds. But then when it came to the digital age, it's like, well, if we're going to get rid of all of our physical media, the one we're going to keep is the vinyl because it just is more of a piece of art, I guess. And we actually like frame them and put them on the walls to like justify owning them, that kind of thing. So
the one thing, the argument's always made with vinyl as well is, oh, it sounds so much warmer. You've got these extra, you know, frequencies there, but,
that's called dust. That's called dust.
I've also got a very high end sound system that I got secondhand and then rebuilt it all. And, I'll tell you what, man, you chuck an MP3 on a $10,000 sound system and it's still going to sound amazing.
Right, right. Yeah, I don't know if I make that argument. It's just kind of fun to play.
Yeah.
That's all I'll say. It's kind of fun to play with. So, all right. So I'm going to let you kind of steer the car here. What are some of your favorite tracks on this? We're not going to go track by track on this one, but we're just going to look at some of the ones that tie to other songs, maybe have bits and pieces that were used in other songs, some of the connections that maybe we didn't make in our official Fragile episode. So go ahead, Nick. What do you got?
So one of the things I noticed, like their version of the Frail, the deviation is like just a quiet version. So, you know, when you've got hurt, and then you've got hurt in brackets quiet off of, was it Further Down the Spiral or the re-release version? And you're sitting there sort of wondering, hey, you know, what really is the difference? So they definitely did that with the Frail. It's like cuts out just a lot of little background noises, little bit of layering from behind it. And I just found that was sort of like, oh, okay. Yeah, that's like a, you know, tip of the hat, if you would.
Yeah, that one's cool. It's pretty much, I feel like it's mostly piano, as opposed to like the Frail on the official release is definitely more orchestrated.
Yeah, it's got
and it's a little echoey, a little slower. Yeah. And it is cool. It's a little bit more stripped down. It's a cool little take on it for sure. Yeah, when we saw them live, they went into the Frail, and we got so excited they were going to play a Fragile song, and then they didn't. We thought he was going to go into the Wretched, and then he didn't. But that's okay. That's all right.
That's they're good at doing that. You know, they'll tease you. Both two times that I saw them in the 2000s, they did the Frail into the Wretched, but you know that was sort of the tour at the time, I guess. With that leading into as well, the Wretched, so I mean it's very much the same version on this one, but they extend it by I think about an extra minute or so, and one part that's always fun on that track is there's this sort of weird, I don't know, I guess it sounds like a whispered lyric, which is what everyone always comments on it, and no one's ever been able to work out, but you get so much closer to what actually sounds like the vocal. It sounds almost like, are you reading us or something like that?
Huh. Someday somebody's going to crack the code and connect this song to Year Zero. Like I always said, they were connected. when I was listening to this version, I thought the guitar sounded bigger. Yes. That's probably just because without him singing, they just come to the forefront a little bit more.
Well, I think that's part of the remixing, so to speak, is that by cutting out the vocals, they need to enhance certain parts, and they've done that in quite a lot of the tracks. Sort of right from the opening is Somewhat Damaged, they've added sort of more sounds to fill in where the vocals are missing.
Yeah, that's true. I did notice like there, and it may have been going on the whole time, but there's like this synth just ripping towards the end of that song that they just let go a lot longer, I believe, than that's on the original album at the very end. Somewhat Damaged.
Yeah, I noted down that it's like a longer, more realized version. That they just sort of, they carried it through to sort of a bit more of a completed place potentially.
Yeah. All right, so on the next side, 1B, do you have anything on this side that you want to talk about?
So 1B, so you're going off the vinyl side. I just got the track listing list.
So it starts with Missing Places is the first track.
Um, Yeah, I think with Missing Places, you can definitely hear that it would have been a great lead-in into Wearing This Together Now. It's got that same, you know, wow effect going that's used throughout the track.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Thank you for doing that, by the way. It's not Pod Like a Hole if you're not doing mouth music. So I, a little scatting and yeah, and beatboxing. So I appreciate that. yeah, absolutely.
I'd say just because of where they do go with Wearing This Together, it's probably a bit more intense and harder sort of feel than what would have been actually useful on the album at that point of time.
Right, yeah, they just kind of use it in the actual album. They just kind of use it as a lead-in, but this is like it's its own little ditty. You kind of get like sucked into the choppy sound. And then it builds. And then when We're In This Together actually starts, it is really cool. You can see the effect, but you know they had to like make a call for time or something. And they're like, well, maybe it's close to the same effect if we just cut it down to 30 seconds.
Yeah. I mean, it was a double album as it was, and I'm guessing that they had the sensibility to not go down the Smashing Pumpkins path with their double opus, which, you know, turned into about 8 good songs, I think, in the end.
Right.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Yeah, I'm having a brain fart on the title of that one right now, but everyone knows the album I'm talking about.
Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah, that would have been a great single album, not a double.
Pretty much the only other thing I had notes on for side 1B was the march, but did you have anything else on here that you wanted to talk about before then?
So Just Like You Imagined... has this vocal building effect that they used in, like, say, Leaving Hope, which is on Still. And they've used it a couple of different points during this era, including live. You know, I think that it was described as like they just recorded like a sort of bit of a vocal loop on the synth and then just layered it to make like a wall of sound.
Okay.
But
so they use that same kind of sound on those other songs?
Yeah, they've used it on a few different tracks. If you can pick it out, it's, you know, it's cool. One of those things that carries on in the background. Yeah, it's just... one of those things.
Oh,
but
awesome.
Yeah,
I'll have to check that out.
And then yeah, as you getting onto the march. Yeah, so the march turned into I would say the track and all that could have been that's on Still. It drops off at about the 1 minute mark and plays just and really sort of softens down. And if you can't hear yourself sort of singing along to the lyrics from And All That Could Have Been, the track, you know, maybe it's just a timing thing. I might be insane. Who knows?
I think I know what you mean. Like, this song is really cool. It starts kind of big, right?
Yep.
There's a lot of like, there's a lot of marching. Like, you hear like the drums that are kind of doing this. It's not a marching drum, but it's like a drum set playing a march.
Yeah.
Type beat. You have a big acoustic guitar. You got some buzzing frets, and then they get into this quiet place with this really like cool synth, and then
just a little
almost like what it sounds like an Adrian Belew guitar, which he's not on this song, but he was on, you know, half this album.
Yeah.
But it's like doing a really cool little like proggy solo in the background, but it is mellow for sure. And I think that's the part you're talking about, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's got just this little strumming that just sort of drives it at that point of time. And if like I tried to listen to them over the top of each other and see how much I could get it to match up, but you know, I'm not a musician in that regard or anything like that. But I just, as soon as I heard this version the very first time, I was just like taken to where he's literally singing like, you know, I am tainted, the two of us were never meant to be. You know, if you start singing along at that point, it suddenly just becomes a song. I was pretty blown away by that.
Yeah, that's wild. That's totally wild. He did use this track when he produced most of Saul Williams' album.
Yep.
The Rise and Fall of Niggy Tardust, and he Skin of the Drum uses a bit of this song in there.
Yes. Yeah. You guys pointed that out, and I was like, oh yeah, that's one way it was used, but. Yeah, jumped onto this other one as well, where they sort of held it back for themselves.
Well,
I guess it
may just be a coincidence, but you may be onto something, and like I've scoured the internet for some of this stuff, and you may be breaking news from you on that one.
I'm completely wrong in just imagining things.
That's okay. That's okay too. That's all the work I do on this podcast is imagining things. So that's fine.
Yeah, conspiracy Trent. That's the nickname that I've got for you.
That's good. I'll take it. I'll take it. and it's funny. In every other aspect of my life, I'm very like fact based and not a conspiracy guy at all. But I'll take it. From when it comes to art, I'm always looking for the fan things. I guess that's where my conspiracy side goes to, but because art's like, you know, nobody's gonna go shoot up a pizza parlor because of a conspiracy theory about arts.
Well, no, and it's I think the kids' books that you guys would have had over in the States is with all the hidden Indians that you've got to look for in all the pictures. You know, I guess you'd say hidden Native Americans now. But you know, you always sort of look for those sorts of things. Is there more way to interpret this image than or the sound than what you're right. originally being told to look, you know, look or listen for.
Sure. And with an artist like Nine Inch Nails or you know, movies by like David Lynch or whatever, like they purposely know that people like to dig, so they make it fun for you if you're that kind of viewer or listener. So
yeah, I think even in the darkest of Trent's times, he was. You know, I think I read somewhere from memory that he's like, oh, you know, we spent 7 months trying to find one particular guitar sound or something like that. And that is this album. I mean, and then he says that he was still in a really, you know, out there place and, you know, of all of his drug problems. And it's just like, well, I think he dragged a lot, you know, everyone down into that hole with him and made sure that there was stuff we could all find.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, that's awesome. All right. What else you got on? We got 2A now. Let's see if I got anything in here. Do you have anything? Looking at Even Deeper, Pilgrimage, One Way to Get There. No, you don't. And Take It.
Pilgrimage. I found. You know, you guys sort of talked about how the original there is a bit more of a Dictator's Long March type thing. You know.
That's certainly what I thought.
Yeah, and they've changed it now. It's more of like a insane circus procession. They've sort of mucked around with the sounds and added some sort of filters that make all wobbling sounds, I guess.
Yeah, that's true, because... and by the way, Pilgrimage is the last song that we talk about before I go into a drunken blackout while we're recording that. And I do remember, like, we're all laughing about the big old brass. It sounds like there's big old brass because it's kazoos. He went into a bar and had a bunch of people play kazoos.
Yeah.
And I think actually maybe what had happened was he put a bunch of filters on those to make them sound like a marching band.
Yep.
But then this version, it maybe is more stripped down, or it's just a different filter. And that's what, that's like the circus sound definitely comes in.
Yeah. Yeah. You sort of hear it. And instead of sounding like, the big brass, it's, yeah, it said it's just wobbling in and out and, sort of sounds like, I don't know, you know, some sort of bells on filters. And so, yeah, it's got to just creates a whole new vibe to the song that was probably lost or, you know, changed. Maybe because the dynamic of the world's changed, he's thought, oh, well, I'll have a bit more fun with it now. I mean, you guys do seem to have a leader who belongs in a, you know, in a circus type environment.
Bingo. Bingo. Yeah, that's great. Oh, yeah. Oh my. The guitars are definitely bigger on this version of the song.
Yes, yeah. Too, fatter.
Fatter. Yes. Awesome. The next song, One Way to Get There, I did mark that this one sounds a lot like one of my favorite soundtrack songs was Driver Down.
Yes.
From Lost Highway.
Yep.
It reminds me of it. He's using, that's what I was talking about. He's using this buzzy guitar sound on this that he does not use very at all anymore, really. It's that hyper compressed guitar from the Downward Spiral era. And he's definitely got that going on the song. So it's fun to hear that again.
Yeah. I listen to this a few different ways. But if you've got a decent sub, you know, in your stereo or some, really, good sort of over ear headphones, you run the risk of making your brain explode, I think. That's full on. Yeah.
Yeah, there's some crazy stuff going on in this song. That's good. Actually, I have really decent headphones, and I have not done that on this album yet, so that'll be my next step.
Yeah, that...
we might record the third episode about
yeah, deviations. The bass drum that kicks in on that is just boo, boo, boo. It's just someone just... you know, literally just bashing the door in. It's great. You know, it's such a great, great track. Probably a little bit intense for the album overall, which is, I'd say, the reason why they skipped it. But it's always good to rehear.
Yeah, it definitely doesn't fit this album. I said it was Taken. Sounds like it could have been on the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo score, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's
that's the only note I wrote about that.
There's some production techniques that are interesting. It doesn't offer too much. Maybe some of those techniques were used on like a remix album or something. But you know,
yeah,
fun with Pro Tools.
So we're on to side 2B. What do you got on this one that you like?
So we open with La Mer. Great tracks. When I was a scuba instructor and I used to put on just crap loads of dive footage while I was doing the theory stuff, La Mer and The Great Below were always on those soundtracks just to, you know, keep the students entertained. But this version, the drums have been like adjusted to a open room sort of sound. Like maybe they've added some reverb or changed from an electronic kit to an acoustic kit.
And the bass is like is stand-up bass, and I'm not sure if it's the same bass sound they use in the final version, but it's definitely sounds way more like a stand-up acoustic bass, which I always appreciate because I played that back in high school, so I always appreciate that.
Yeah.
No, I was just going to say, we've talked about it on the show before, but La Mer is such a cool song. It's got such a history. It's like one of the only songs that survived his, like, maybe suicide attempt in Big Sur, California. And and apparently there's like a noise at the beginning of the song, which came from a damaged DAT tape.
Okay.
Which obviously was what he recorded on initially. So you almost wonder, like, you know, turbulent times, the tape got damaged, but the song survived. I
mean, yeah.
And he survived, right? So, yeah. Well, it's just kind of a cool, you know.
It's also interesting. I've got a version which came from, you know, nin.com. And that goes in the complete, like, opposite direction, where it's just a heavily electronic drum sound.
Think about Not What It Seems Like. Did you have any notes on that one?
So this is one of the ones that was labeled as instrumental, which means at some point that it had lyrics and vocals. So you can hear all the spaces where there would have been, you know, vocal melodies, but I was just sort of, you know, it'd be interesting to find out what was going to be written and, you know, how it would have sounded like.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, and I could be wrong here, but it sounds like the musical palette sounds very similar to the Big Come Down.
Yep.
I almost like feel like I'm hearing some of the same drum sounds and some of the, like the buzzy strumming. That like, like that kind of thing, like that same guitar sound. I almost wonder if it started here with different lyrics. He liked the sound pad.
Yep.
But then it evolved into Big Come Down or something.
Yeah.
I almost wonder that, but it sounds similar. Like it's using some of the same sounds for sure.
It's possibly a little bit too upbeat for the album. You know, if you were to put it in the space, you know, between what would have been CD 1 and CD 2 originally, you know, you sort of got too much hope, I guess, just to know, to, you know, once you know what's coming up, it's just like, oh, you know, he's just teasing us. Nah, it's actually, life's still terrible. So here's all the rest of the songs.
Right. Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. I do just, actually, we are kind of going track by track, but we're going fast, dear listeners. White Mask is one that I always like. It is the most jazzy of the Nine Inch Nails songs, I think. There's brush drums and fretless bass.
It's very minimalist, you know, they're just a couple of guys there having a bit of a bash around. You can almost hear what the sort of idea of what they ended up doing with the ghost style stuff in there as well.
Totally. Yeah, absolutely. I always like the song, The New Flesh is not one of my favorite songs. I know why it was taken off the album or whatever. But I love the instrumental version because I do think there's a lot of really crazy instrumentations going on. And I love its connection to the song Complications. Did we skip over Complications? Where is that?
Complications.
Yeah, I might have skipped over that.
No. Complications is coming later.
Okay. Well, anyways, it's got some connections to Complications, which is why Danny Lohner ended up doing that mashup on the remix album, which I always, I really like that one. I can't help it. That's a really cool song. So I always like listening to this instrumental version to kind of hear all the sounds that he pulled out of that for that remix.
Yeah, the New Flesh was used as the opener on the DVD that was done in the era. You know, I was into my first share house with one of my buddies and a couple of my buddies, and yeah, we were just stoners at the time, and I think I played that DVD about 100,000 times or something. It was just every day. You know, you get home and smoke a bit and then throw that one on. And yeah, so that was just so familiar. So when I actually finally heard where it was supposed to go rather than just a, you know, an opening sort of track, it was just like, oh yeah, okay. Yeah, it took me back a few years.
That's cool, yeah. Yeah, that's interesting because, yeah, I guess at that time, if you hadn't heard that extended version, which was not out then, well, no, the vinyl was out, I guess. But if you hadn't heard that, you would have probably thought it was like a Now I'm Nothing or something.
Yeah, yeah.
That just like a kind of like unreleased song they were opening an album with.
Yeah, just something, you know, like I think a lot of the tours and that sort of stuff, a lot of bands would always have, oh, yeah, here's a little 45 second of whatever. And yeah, it was always like, oh, okay, there it is. But then, yeah, to actually realize that it is a song was just like, oh, that's great.
Yeah. Did you have anything on the next side? I didn't. Most of its stuff, it's all songs that were on the official release, so I don't have too many notes.
Into the Void for me is always a great one. I mean, as it was an Australian single, it did actually make it was pretty popular in Australia, even if it was never an official Halo. And we used to have a early morning on the weekends music video clip show called Rage, and that one made quite an appearance, you know, sort of every time. So if you're either up too late or up too early, yeah, it was always a good song to see showing up at the time.
That's great. Yeah. I mean, I think it was a moderate hit here. I mean, I know I heard it around. I never remember seeing the video anywhere until much later. So,
yeah.
But yeah, that's great. That's right. And then they released those three on like those three singles out there, which, I mean, does it kind of irk you that those were not official Halos? the Australian singles?
It upsets me that I never got them. I don't have them in my collection, and now they cost an absolute fortune. Things that I could have bought for, you know, I don't know what would have been $8 or $9 here at the time, and now, you know, $60 or $70, and it's just like, oh, holy crap, you know, like, yeah, why didn't I?
There's some good stuff on this. Yeah. It's too bad. Yeah, I don't have much else. I mean, I love Where Is Everybody, and there is so much going on in that song that it's always fun to hear the instrumental version of that one. That's I don't have much to say about it, except just like I've always liked that song because there's a ton going on, but it's fun to finally hear all the little things happening.
Yeah, picking out some of the nuances in the tracks, you get rid of the vocals, and it's all those little things that you never noticed. Yeah, like a lot of these songs, there's always, yeah, the moments that aren't a part of the song that make the song. You know, there's the Rolling Stones song where the backup singer and her voice breaks, and you're always just like, ah, oh, you know, that's the moment that defines that track. And this album has a lot of those things, and now you really get to pick them apart and notice them.
Yeah, absolutely. Next side, do you have anything on that one? Starting with Was It Worth It?
On the next side.
I have some notes on Was It Worth It. That's one of the instrumental ones. So this one did have vocals at some time, but it was unreleased.
bouncy synths that go all around the place. Yeah, there's definitely some layering on drums going on. It's
yeah, you sound like it almost sounds like you're a spoon man clacking away on the spoons, and then the drums go into this crazy like drum and bass area towards the end, which other than Starfuckers, there's not a lot of that on this album.
Yeah,
that's kind of cool.
It's got a few little like heavy. You know, as you say, like the heavy compression in it and that sort of stuff. But then there's that keyboard that and it's just like, oh, okay, that's not what you expect when you hear a Nine Inch Nails album. You know, it's a bit getting too close to everything territory.
Right, a new way.
Yeah, he's revisiting his time with the First Ministry album. You know, when he was listening to that and trying to get inspired.
Oh yeah, his time in Exotic Birds.
Yeah.
Have Appendage on here just because Appendage is a cool thing. It was released on the cassette
with
vocals, so you can hear it. There's a YouTube clip if you need to hear it. I'm sure there's some insidious way to download it somewhere, but it's a really cool song. They're taking Please, like a part, like the Never Be Enough to Fill You Up part from Please, and they're taking some of the instrumentation from Please, and then Charlie Clouser just layered some, like basically remixed it with a bunch of heavy synth.
Yep.
But it goes on for a long time, and it's a cool little track. I like it. And this version doesn't have the vocals though, but you have to imagine those. But you can find those online if you look on YouTube.
Oh, I mean, when that wall of just compressed guitars and that hits you, it's just it's like an assault on your body. You know, you could use that to torture someone. It's just, you know, unless they enjoyed it, and then it's just the best thing in the world. Right. Yeah, I made a note, like, if this led into to Starfuckers, would that track have been so out of place on the album? You know, if you've already been bashed apart by this track, then, you know, then Starfuckers would have been, oh, yeah, that's fine. You know, I can handle this now.
Well, and Starfuckers is pretty heavy, but it's also so silly. That like I think it would take away from Starfuckers if you got bashed and then Starfuckers doesn't bash you as much, and then all that's left is that it's silly.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, don't get me, we've all come full circle on Starfuckers. We're fine. I'm not bashing Starfuckers, but it is silly. Come on.
It's to me, it's like the one track that doesn't fit the rest of the album. If you're going for a like a concept album, which this almost is, it's like, oh, that one isn't quite right.
No, and even if it's not a concept album, there is a theme, and every song falls into that theme. And unless he's just... And that theme that we've talked about before is like, you know, there's pain, there's healing, and then there's always the dread of more pain coming back. And that's just the cycle. And that's really what this album's about. And unless he's being so damn literal that, like, Courtney Love and Marilyn Manson pissed him off... and that's his pain, then I see no way that it fits on.
Yeah, that. Yeah, it's just a weird one. Or maybe, although everyone knows, you know, that it's, you know, his upsetness, and then, you know, maybe he's just like, there's too many groupies as well or something, you know, like.
Right, it's true. It's true. So let's piss off the fans. No, it's a fine song. All I have is on this one is... Yeah. Oh, on this side is the claustrophobia machine. Raw.
Is
That's a crazy good song.
Claustrophobia Machine. Yeah, that's is that that on this yeah. side? I was just gonna say with Can I Stay Here? I was just gonna with that one. It sounds like they were using the same sort of instruments as the Fragile, the actual song. Yeah, it's just like a jazzy little number, and it doesn't belong on the album, but you can you get the song The Fragile, and you're like, oh, okay, they've used the same instruments, they've spent some, you know, some time in the same room mucking around with the same sort of stuff.
Right, yeah, they had their settings. Like, this week we're just gonna leave our boards at this settings, we're gonna play a few songs, and whatever one we like at these settings we're gonna use, the rest we're gonna scrap. And, you know, they played this, they played Fragile, and
yeah.
Fragile.
Yeah, I'm glad that they didn't scrap a lot of these ones, that we did get to find out about them later on. You know, it's almost, you know, when you hear about artists that delete whole albums because they don't like it, and it's just like, nah, come on, put it aside for later. You know, your hardcore fans will spend another, you know, I don't know, $80 or something, and they just want to muck around and hear it.
yeah, we're just curious. Exactly. Yeah, so yeah, the next side. Oh, you know what I did think was funny? The song Feeders.
Yeah, it's computer game music.
I mean, it doesn't really have. Yeah, it doesn't have a lot. It is computer game music. It sounds like just ambient loops going on and on that ended up being the intro to No You Don't, right?
Yeah. It'd be almost in place on like the Quake soundtrack or something like that.
Right. But I do think it's funny. Apparently, there's a clip from the movie Real Genius starring Val Kilmer.
Okay.
That's in the background somewhere. Yeah, it's in the background somewhere. It's a comedy. Have you ever seen that one? It's a goofy goofball comedy from like the 80s, from like the mid-late
80s. Okay.
And it's on in the background. I can hear some talking, but I obviously don't know what scene it is or anything. I just think it's really funny that somebody figured out that was Real Genius.
Did he even know that when he was doing it at the time?
Who knows? It might have just been in the background, like when he was recording a guitar part.
Yeah,
something.
Yeah. I want these pickups. They're so sensitive; they can hear everything, and that's what it got.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. But yeah, Claustrophobia Machine is on here. That one is just a big percussion piece. I really do like it. It's noisy. It's one of the more industrial songs on here. I get into it.
So much fun on the drums. You know, if whoever's playing that did not have a good time recording that, or even if it's just done, you know, purely synthetic. But yeah, that's. Just makes you want to bounce around, I think.
Yeah, that's a goodie. That's a goodie. Do you have anything else on this side?
The Complication has a similar bass effect to the New Flesh. They could have been sequenced together pretty well, I thought.
Yeah, that's kind of like what I said. I think they ended up mashing them up because they are. I think they're from the same recording session, and I absolutely. I can definitely hear connections to those two songs.
Yeah, probably not too much that I can sort of pick apart, like apart from just longer versions and that sort of stuff. Probably the only other one is right at the end is the Ripe with Decay. It's just got a brighter drum track, and there's some new sort of washboard DJ scratching tracks that are added in there.
I love that track. And it is two songs put together, right? Because on the CD, it was just Ripe, but on the cassette and the vinyl, it was Ripe with Decay.
Yep.
And it's just, they're just two tracks that go good together that end an album that, and that totally, and I'm quoting my co-host Steve here, but it just fits the theme perfectly.
Yeah. I like that.
There's a little like,
oh, I like that new little wah, 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 noise going on there. It's sort of, you know, like they're having a bit of fun there. I guess around that time of nu metal, they thought, hey, we can add a, you know, we can add a DJ scratch to this sound.
Right. Yeah, it's true. It's true. It's not unheard of. Yeah. Not since Aerosmith and Run DMC did it.
Was that Rick Rubin that put that collaboration together, or did he do Public Enemy with Anthrax?
Rick Rubin was embedded with Run DMC, so it might have been him to blame.
So much to answer for.
But anyways, it's a great song. It's cool to hear it all instrumentaled out. The definitive edition that's been out now that you can get the MP3 for has this on it as well.
There was one version that I noticed someone out there went and did. You can get it through one of those illegitimate means. There's a definitive deviation out there. So they've taken the definitive edition and then added all the deviation stuff as well. So you can sort of have like a replaced album, I guess you'd say.
Cool. Okay, interesting.
You know, fans have
endless possibilities.
I note one thing that I sort of remembered is you had your one act of diversity on the podcast so far, and having a non-male, non-bearded person join in.
Oh right.
Yeah. What was her?
I don't have a beard.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't have a beard.
You're a female guest friend. She mentioned how one of her friends pretty well went in.
Yes. Sarah.
Yeah. She mentioned how one of her friends had a seizure during one of the concerts. On that note,
yes.
when we saw the With Teeth tour, and Trent comes out and he's in full-on Hulk smash mode, and the whole crowd I think took a step back, you know, like, and
I remember seeing him come out. I'm like, what?
Yeah. He's got this cut and these arms that could just crush you, you know. And
that's right, he took his Bane vest.
Yeah. And during that show I was there with one of my best friends, Woody, and we smoked a joint in the middle of the arena, and then next thing, some of the lights just hit him right in the face, and he literally went blind for about two tracks. I had to carry him out to the bathroom until he could recover his senses again. So, you know, Sarah's friend's not the only one that suffers from the lighting shows at Nine Inch Nails gigs.
Yeah, well, they've started putting warnings up, which is probably a good thing.
So. Yeah, that makes it a little bit nicer.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Cool, man. Well, that was fun. That was definitely feel like I've dug in. I've given it the due diligence that I kind of give the albums now. It's taken me like a process. Like, it took me about, you know, five episodes in till I got my research my research and note-taking routine down for these albums, so I definitely was happy to go back, circle back on this one.
Yeah.
What do you... sorry, go on.
Oh, I was just going to say, yeah, this one, as I said, because it's got the emotional significance for me, so I had to, you know, revisit anything that I could regarding that time. You know, whereas some of the newer stuff, you know, like I pre-ordered every single one of the new EPs, and I still haven't opened my little sachet of printer toner cartridge or anything yet. You know, like the, you know, everyone else, I saw it online, everyone ruining their bed sheets and clothes. Yeah. And I went, oh, I don't need to do that. So,
No. I actually read the label and opened it in my garage. So it was okay. But yeah, but you don't have to. I mean, you don't have to open it. Although it is cool to see the them reprint the lyrics over the Downward Spiral pages, yeah. Just to see some of the connections there. But or you can just listen to our show and we'll explain it to you, and you can just leave it as an open collector's item and sell it for a shitload of money.
I think I'll just keep it as a collector's thing and wait until it's not worth anything, and then you know realize that oh well, I should open it now.
Yeah, there you go. That's great. So what do you think, like, what would be, like, your top three favorite Nine Inch Nails songs?
Top three favorite? Yeah, probably Into the Void. For me, that, you know, it's got the lyrics that keep you traveling. If that makes sense, like it takes you places, and you know, how can you go wrong with that?
Oh yeah. No, going down to the station and all that. Yeah.
It's from that age, you know, it was always one of those tracks that as you're walking along or, you know, you're doing anything, it's just like, all right, cool. I'm traveling with this one. This one definitely, keeps me going. The Fixed Happiness and Slavery. Now that's just such a driven track, you know, like if you look at some of my plays on iTunes, that one's right up there as to the number that it's been done.
Yes. I love somebody that will put a remix into their top songs. On our next episode, we're going to go through our top nine songs, and we're going to see, what happens when I throw a couple of those in there.
Yeah. I don't think, you know, I think people should give some of them the time. Some of them are junk. The remix of Fragile didn't resonate with me as much as it did the way that you guys seem to have enjoyed it. But you know, that's all right, you know. Say probably Only. That's With Teeth as well. That's just such a great album. Yeah, a lot of minimalist stuff on that. And then the way that he took it live as well, where he stripped versions down, was a lot of fun. So, yeah.
Yeah, all right. That's good. So then, which is Fragile your favorite album?
Yeah, Fragile's my favorite album. And the Meathead perspective on With Teeth was my favorite review of any of the Nine Inch Nails stuff I've ever read.
Yeah. Oh, yeah? What was that?
I know that one of you guys has mentioned the Meathead perspective before, but he was this guy that did all these, I don't know, like fan versions, but he just, you know, took sort of the piss out of all the albums in a lot of ways, and he'd, you know, he'd show the number of different instruments that were played on a particular track when he did the With Teeth one, and he's literally putting pictures of, you know, flip-flops in one of them, and he's like, yeah, that's one of the instruments in this track, you know, so, yeah, I just remember that and still laugh.
I remember Mark brought up Meathead a little bit, but I was not like engaged online at that point, so yeah, I missed out on a lot of that.
His flash version of the film clip for Discipline, where it's in like a gay club and you know, Trent's there in all of his leathers spanking his own ass, and yeah, it's brilliant. Yeah.
That's perfect. That's good. Awesome. All right. Well, I really appreciate you coming on. I was looking forward to digging back into this one.
Thank you for having me.
You've connected a lot of dots. I appreciate it. Good deal. So, any got anything else? Anything to promote? We always ask that. It's okay if you say no.
I don't have Twitter or Instagram or anything, so no.
Good. Keep it that way.
Promote Nine Inch Nails.
Stay out of the echo chamber.
I promote the idea of Nine Inch Nails coming back to Australia again. You know, the last time they were out here, Queens of the Stone Age. I missed that tour. I think I was living in South Africa at the time. So yeah, come back. We want you back here.
Yeah, it's too bad you missed. They didn't come by on the last one. It was a special little thing, but I don't know. He seemed energized by it. Maybe he'll do another one soon.
Yeah, but we got Primus not that long ago, and they didn't do the entirety of the Desaturating Seven. You know, they opened up with those damn blue collar tweakers, and I think I'm still riding high from that show from like six months ago.
Oh, yeah, that would be awesome. Yeah, I've seen them a few times. Yeah, last time I saw him was with my co-host way back in like 04 or 05, and they played Seas of Cheese all the way through.
Yeah, oh, brilliant. That's a dream.
Yeah, yeah. All right, man. Well, hey, thanks a lot. I think we added a lot more depth to Deviations, and definitely keep interacting with us, and we appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your time.
All right, have a great day. It's night. It's nighttime. It's almost late. It's almost late for me.
I'm going out to a pinball comp, so it's all good.
Yeah, very nice. Very nice. All right. All good. Well, have fun.
Thank you.
Yeah. Bye.